one of the interesting things has been over the last couple of days, I have bumped into people on the street or in other places who join this group every day who I haven't seen in over a year in person. So that is really nice. It's, I feel like we're connected in this group and we see each other every day and we learn together every day. Other than Avi Kesslinger, who we have to get to visit us from Israel so we can see you in person. Everybody else, it's good to see those who are around. And it is special to be learning together every day. Today, we are going to resume with our study of Mishlei, and we're going to start Perek Chaf Gimel. We'll see if we can maybe accomplish Perek Chaf Gimel and Chaf Dalet this week. But today, I want to focus in on one very specific mashal that is really curious, which is what some of these mashalim are supposed to be. So let's take a look at the first seven or eight psukim, and then we'll look at some malbim, and we'll look at some rashi, and we'll see where it takes us, okay? Here is the first mashal, or the first two mashalim of Perek Chaf Gimel. Kisei shev lil chom. When you sit down to break bread, right? From the shoresh of lechem. Kisei shev lil chom. When you sit down to eat with others, es moshel. And who are you sitting with? With a ruler, a powerful person. A moshel doesn't usually refer to the king, doesn't refer to the most powerful person. Sometimes the moshel refers to the second in command who's really in charge, which is worth considering as a possible interpretation of this text. Yosef is the Moshel b'chol Eretz Mitzrayim. Paro reminds him constantly that he is not in charge of the country, but in practice, he's the one who runs the country. Okay? Kisei shev lo chomes Moshel. If you sit down to eat with an influential, powerful person, with a ruler, bin tavin es asher lefanecha. Has this ever happened to any of you? You know, you're sitting with someone who's a very prominent person, or you're sitting with someone who's a very influential person, and it starts out very formally, but over the course of the meal, you eat together, you have a few glasses of wine together, you have a few drinks with dessert. All of a sudden, you find yourself in a much more casual dialogue with someone with whom you're not supposed to be casual at all. So Shlomo HaMelech says, Kishe shev lochom es Moshe, when you sit down to break bread with a powerful person, bin tavin es asher lefanecha. Make sure you really consider who is sitting across the table from you. Visamta sakin biloecha imbal nefeshata. And if you're the kind of person who has a large appetite, put the knife into your throat, which presumably means, although maybe we'll see some different interpretations of it, it means something like don't overeat or don't get too comfortable. You know, you get invited to the White House and they have tons of unlimited amounts of food. You could eat whatever you wanted. There's always going to be more for everyone else, but don't jump to conclusions. Don't overdo it. Al tisa'av limatamosav. Don't crave all of his fancy foods. Many of you have heard me talk about this before, the language of matanim, which originates in the story of Yaakov and Esav trying to capture the brachos from their father, becomes a very prominent term in the Zmiros of Shabbos. I'm sure you'll nod your heads. Mata'amim appears more, and maybe just a coincidence, but I don't think it is a term that appears more in the liturgy of Shabbos Miros than it does anywhere else, which is really fascinating. Al tistav l'matamosav. Don't crave all of his fancy foods. V'hu lechem kezavim. They are counterfeit breads. Now, what exactly that means, we don't know. Al tiga lehashir mibinascha chadal. Don't toil too hard to get rich, to get wealthy. Mibinascha chadal. Use your mind to restrain yourself. Hasa'if inecha bo v'einenu. Because you see something and then it's gone. It grows wings and flies away. Like an eagle that flies to the heavens. So this, of course, is a very unusual mashal in the first five psukim. And just to contrast it, you'll see that there's more about eating with others in the following mashal, which maybe we'll elaborate on more tomorrow. Pasuk vav, pasuk zayin, pasuk ches. Al tolcham es lechem ra'ayin. Don't eat the food of a stingy person. And don't crave his things. Because he likes keeping and accounting. You know, he says, eat and drink. You know, he invites people over, but he keeps track of how much food they steal from his fridge. Pitcha achalta tzkiena, the morsels that you eat, you'll eventually vomit out. V'shichata dvarecha animim, and you'll waste all of your courteous words. V'oznei kisiel al tedaber, so don't speak to a dullard, to a foolish person. Ki avuz l'seichem mimecha, because he'll disdain all of the words that you say that are that actually make sense. Al taseh givul olam u'pstei yisomim al tavo. Don't remove ancient boundary stones. Don't encroach upon the fields of orphans. So very strange, curious kind of parak here, and very dramatic or colorful mishalim. So if you look at the Malbim in his commentary, his suggestion is not entirely surprising. Kiseishev lochom is Moshel, sitting to eat with the ruler. Kishiteishev lechol lechem im Moshel, tavidim yayoshev lefanecho, ba'al tishkach ki Moshel ata yoshev. Don't forget, even though your guys are sitting in a casual fashion, don't forget who you're sitting with. If you're not careful, you'll be put to death. They'll send you to jail because of something you said at the meal that you shouldn't have said. Okay? And then he says, don't overeat. Don't be so tempted. Or al tisav l'matamosav hu lechem k'savim b'mitzad matamim be'atzmam. V'al tisu l'matamosav hu mevar hatam ki hu lechem k'savim. Ki ha-moshel, this is the punchline, eino nozim l'cha ba'avurecha lo l'hanascha l'cha l'cha v'lo l'chodecha rak l'hanaso. You have to remind yourself that even though your host seems to be a very generous person, they're not buying you a fancy dinner because they want you to have a fancy dinner. They're in it for themselves. Ve'ino lechem amiti. It's not bread of truth. Raki achana al mashi golo lelecha v'yavakesh mimcha. He sits you down. He wines and dines you. He offers you something fancy. But ultimately, he's really in it for himself. There's something that's going to be asked of you. It's only a question of if and, you know, what and when. V'chol sehu mashal al ha-moshal asher ba'adam shehu yitzra misave v'koach misore ha-moshal begaviyah. And then he goes on to explain that the whole metaphor is a metaphor for the relationship between the soul and the body. That the soul sits down to dine with the body. The body is very generous. It's giving you opportunities for pleasure. And you think, what's the harm? It's just the two of us sharing a beautiful life. And you don't realize that the body demands from you so much more, and it's going to ultimately have harm and long-term damage on the soul. Okay, so that's kind of a fascinating interpretation. I would just say it's a fascinating mashal, and the interpretation almost speaks for itself. But keep that in mind and take a look at the following Gemara. And this Gemara is important because it also teaches us not only an interpretation of this text, but how the Chachamim themselves in the times of the Gemara looked at the Psukim in Mishle. Okay, this is a Gemara. I'm going to share it on the screen. Gemara in Chulin. Meseches Chulin on Dav Vav Amar Aleph, 6a. The Gemara in Chulin on Dav Vav Amar Aleph tells us a halacha that you're not allowed to drink wine that was produced by a Kusi, by a Samaritan. And the assumption is that the Samaritans aren't exactly Jews, but they're not non-Jews. You could have made the case that their wine is not considered the wine of non-Jews. But at the same time, as we'll see in the Gemara, because the Kusim were Oved Avodah Zarah, because they had pagan practices within their community, the Tanaim in the times of the Mishnah treated them as if they were non-Jews from the standpoint of their wine being the wine of idolaters. Okay, the Gemara says, "My time agrazur b'hu rabbanan." Why did the Chachamim interfere and say that wine that was made by a Samaritan is forbidden to be eaten? Kihadr of Shimon ben Elazar. Because of Rav Shimon ben Elazar, what's the case? Shadre Rav Meir la'asuye chamra mibeik husayi. Rabbi Meir, sorry, the screen sent it in that direction. Rabbi Meir sent him to go purchase wine from a Samaritan. Okay, so meaning Rabbi Meir sent one of his students to go shopping. And he goes to get wine from a Samaritan wine dealer. Ashkecheya husava. So presumably the person is coming back with, you know, a shopping bag full of wine from a Samaritan business, and he stumbles onto a senior, an older person, a sage, Amar Le, and the sage said to him, look at this Gemara. He says to him, our pasuk in Mishle, v'samta sakin below echa im bal nefesh ata. Now that is all, if you're someone who's familiar with Mishle, if you are comfortable with the text of the Tanakh, So you know exactly what the wise person was telling Rabbi Meir's student, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. He said to him, what are you doing with wine from that store? Stick the knife into your throat if you're a Baal Nefesh. In other words, you shouldn't be drinking wine like that. Halach Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar v'siper dvarim lefnei Rabbi Meir v'gazar aleihem. So once they were informed of this, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar relays the information to Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir immediately makes a decree that the wine cannot be had. It's not kosher. So Gemara says, oh, made a decree just because somebody told him there's a pasuk in Mishlei that says maybe you shouldn't drink this wine? My time, so what's the reason? They found on Har Grizim, which is a mountain that's referred to in the Chumash, of course, that the Samaritans would gather there and they would worship the image of a Yonah, the image of a dove. Previous Shiurim in the past, I've had a chance to teach this Gemara and make suggestions about what the Yonah might be. That's for another day. But the Samaritans were clearly worshiping some kind of pagan, or they had some kind of pagan ritual. This elder was hinting to Rabbi Meir without saying it explicitly through our pasuk, you know, a person like you shouldn't be drinking wine like that. And they went and they did their research and they found out that the Samaritans were in fact Ovdei Avodah Zarah, and therefore the wine should not be had. Rabbi Meir, the time may dechayish lemiuta because aruba atumiuta. The Gemara is making a halachic argument that most Samaritans didn't involve themselves in this. What about most of the wine wasn't used for these purposes? So whatever the halachic argument is, the fact that they found evidence of pagan worship was enough to restrict the drinking of this wine. But then the Gemara does something really interesting. So if you're following, again, just to be clear, the elder who bumped into Rav Shimon ben Elazar casually said to him, I don't think you should drink wine like this. And the way that he conveyed it to him was our pasuk. You're eating with the Moshe, v'sam tesakin b'lo'echa, better to stick the knife in your throat. So he used the pasuk in Mishlei in a very creative way. But then the Gemara says something really fascinating. Pashte dekra b'mai ksiv. You see that? The Gemara says, what's the simple interpretation of the pasuk? There is no simple interpretation of a pasuk in Mishlei. But what the Gemara says, we know that he used it as a hint to try and tell someone else that the food is treif. But what is the pasuk actually talking about? If you're sitting down with the Moshe, be careful, better to stick the knife in your throat. What's the metaphor? What's the proverb? So the Gemara has a fascinating interpretation. This is not the simple interpretation of the text, but what exactly does it mean? So the Gemara says, "B'talmid hayoshev lefnei rabo." It's talking about the relationship between a student and a teacher when the Talmud sits before the Rebbe. The Tani Rebbe Chia, Rabbi Chia darshened our pasuk in Mishlei in the following way: He say shave lil chom es Moshel bin tavin es asher lefanecha v'samto sakin b'loecha and bal nefesh ato. What did Rabbi Chia say? Im yodeya Talmid b'rabo she yodeya lahachzir lo tam bin. If you're sitting with your teacher and you ask him a question that you think he can answer for you, so then you should be curious. That's what bin means here. It means seek wisdom, like bina. If you think that he can answer it for you, ask. V'im lav, and if not, meaning if you think you're going to ask a question and he's not going to be able to answer it, tavinis asher lefanecha, you should realize who you're sitting across the table from. V'samta sakin b'loecha im bal nefesh ata piro shemena. If you are a smart, sensitive person, stick the knife in your throat means don't ask the question. So the Gemara has what I think is the most fascinating and surprising interpretation of our text. This is Rabbi Chia's drasha of our pasuk. The pasuk says, if you're sitting across from the Moshel, who is the Moshel? Is the Rebbe. The Talmud is sitting across from the Rebbe. Bin tavinis asher lefanecha, even though you and your Rebbe are in casual conversation, even though you're having a slice of pizza together, or you and your Rebbe are having a l'chaim in the backyard, whatever it may be, bin tavinis asher lefanecha, think carefully about the dynamic between the teacher and the student. V'sam tasakin b'lo'echa and bal nefesh ata. If you're sensitive to his kavod, and you're sensitive to his feelings, sometimes it's better not to ask than to ask. In other words, Rabbi Chia has the most, I think, fascinating interpretation, and I wouldn't say this is pashte dekra b'mai ksiv. I wouldn't think that this is the simplest explanation of the pasuk at all, but when Rabbi Chia was asked what's going on in this mashal, he said the mashal, the proverb here, is about being respectful in the questions that you ask. You ask questions to someone about something you know they're not going to know the answer to, So then you're just going to embarrass them in public. So just because you have that meaningful relationship doesn't mean you can ask anything you want whenever you want to. Now, what's ironic here, Jay says, this is the origin of the klutz kasha. So let's be clear for a second to respond to the chat. The klutz kasha is a ridiculous question. What Rabbi Chiya is talking about in the Gemara in Chulin is asking questions that you know the teacher is not going to know the answer to. So you undermine the authority of the teacher, or you undermine the effectiveness of the lesson by showing that there are things that the teacher cannot possibly respond to. So it's less of a klutz kasha as much as it is a way of attacking or undermining the person. So Shlomo HaMelech, this is really fascinating that Rabbi Chiya would do this, because Shlomo HaMelech was the wisest of all people. The impression you get is that whenever Shlomo HaMelech was asked a question, it didn't matter what language the question was asked in or what field of study the question was. So Shlomo HaMelech knows the answer to it. So why exactly this would be the Rabbi Chiya's thinking about the pasuk, I don't know. But it's interesting to think, number one, about the relationship between Shlomo and the people who came to ask him questions. And again, for some reason, I keep being fixated on the idea of the Moshel being like a Yosef character, because he was the Moshel B'chol Eretz Mitzrayim. Yosef was the kind of person who was asked impossible questions and also knew the answers. So Shlomo HaMelech here is not talking to great sages full of answers. Shlomo HaMelech is talking to the students and the question they ask to make sure that when we engage with others, we ask questions that are reasonable. We ask them things that they can answer. Sometimes questions are better left in your own mind and not shared with others. So an interesting example of how the Gemara processes these psukim in Mishle, certainly accepting the premise, which is the most important takeaway from this Gemara, that there's more than meets the eye when it comes to studying a mashal like this one. And in the case of Rabbi Chiya, he saw it not about powerful people, not about food and taiva like the Malbim, but he saw it as a metaphor for the way that he interacted with his teachers and the way he asked questions of his Rebbeim and the questions he chose not to ask. Let's hold here for today. We will do a little bit more in Parakah.